Thank you, Jennifer. And if you want a job marketing the Water Corporation, please give me a call. Thank you for those very kind words. Now, I know what you're all thinking. You're thinking, two more talks about water before I get my grilled sesame chicken, stir-fried vegetables with rice noodles and a port wine glaze. Unless I'm the only person who looks at menus from time to time and wonders what's coming next, I think you're probably all quite correct in thinking that. But I'd like you to think a little bit further than what's for lunch. In fact, I'd like you to think a little bit further than what's for lunch tomorrow or the next day or the next year. But in fact, to throw yourselves forward 50 years and have a think about a little issue that we're wrestling with in the corporation, which is the 50-year challenge for Western Australia and Perth in particular, which is to provide water forever in an even drier climate with twice as many people, a zero ecological footprint, no damage to anything, and yet to make the state truly great. Now that sounds pretty simple, and I'm pretty sure we can cover that in 20 minutes. But I think we do need to look back a little bit before we can look forward. This is a graph of the runoff into our dams since, over the last few years. And if you go back to 1950 and the era of the 1950s and 1960s, as you've heard from Roy as well, it was a time of quite fluctuating rainfall. It was a time when we had wet years that were very wet and dry years that were very dry. But overall, the concept was if the dam is big enough, it will fill up in the wet years and you can use it in the dry years. A perfectly rational engineering solution to the situation at hand. The population was not that big, the state was enormous and resources were plentiful. And water was very much controlled by engineers, by building dams. In the 1970s, there were a couple of very dry years, resulting in total sprinkler bans in Western Australia. This was the first time that, when you look at our demand curve, things dropped off dramatically. It saw a huge rise in domestic garden bores, and it was when pay-for-use was introduced. So groundwater became a meaningful and logical solution for the people of Perth, and people suddenly started to see that using more water had a financial impact on them as individuals. In the 1990s, it was pretty clear that the rain wasn't falling as much as it used, and the runoff in the dams was not what it used to be either. So we started looking at other solutions. By now, groundwater was a huge part of the water supply in the Perth area, and so water efficiency started to track onto the horizon. The corporation was well ahead of its time in many ways in the work done in that water efficiency area, and some of the projects started in the late 70s, things like the WaterWise Schools program to educate the generation after the one currently using the water, are starting to pay dividends when you look at some of the demand management things we're seeing. But by the 2000s, it was pretty clear that what could have been called a drought was definitely climate change and that we were definitely in the midst of it. And so our whole planning regime had to change. All the assessments and assumptions that had been made in the past were not going to cut it for the future, and we had to look for climate independence in some of our sources. I think it's to the corporation's credit that we started desalination a little bit ahead of everybody else, but nonetheless, desalination is a viable and an essential part of our platform and program of works going forward. So now we've got a little bit looking forward, looking beyond where we are now. We see that the trend line for runoff into the dams is trending ever downward. What that means is that somewhere in the future, there may be years where we really get virtually nothing from the rain to augment our water supply. It doesn't mean we don't have dams. Clearly, they have a huge role in balancing and managing our water supply. But following that trend line down, we have to look at ways to better use the resource we have. And to me, this is where we really start to make some inroads into how we build our cities, how we live our lives, and what our whole urban form is. We have to stop thinking about water as a vanilla entity. There's lots and lots of different sorts of water, and many of them are fit for various purposes. If we go further forward, by 2030, recycling is likely to be part of our agenda. Is desalination the only part of our agenda? And then going right forward, 2060, well, we have anything in our dams at all? Will the dams be part of the solution? Is Perth going to be a semi-arid area? By 2060, what if we're not having the climate of Geraldton? What if we're having the climate of Karratha? So there's lots of things to think about, and there's a lot of uncertainty. Now, when you're planning for uncertainty, the best solution is to have a number of scenarios from incredibly pessimistic to incredibly optimistic and work through them all with your most likely as the way you judge the way to move forward, but keeping a watching eye on both of them. So if we look at some of the real impacts going forward, let's have a think about population. We have 1.6 million people in the Perth region at the moment. Is that going to be 3.2 million by 2060? That's the sort of figures that are being bandied around at the moment and the sort of figures we're planning for. The current population is growing by approximately 27,000 people every year, and that will mean that it will double in the next 50 years. Now, what does that mean for our water supply? Now, I apologise for the graph because graphs are always complex, and by now you're beyond focusing on graphs, I'm sure. But let me just explain. The yellow bit at the bottom is desalination. And you can see we came on stream during 2007, so that's why it's a sort of a half year for desalination. But from 2020 on, we're assuming the Southern Seawater Desalination Plant's operating. And so we've got a pretty steady 90 to 100 gigs a year of desal water coming into our system. The dark blue bar at the top is water from the groundwater systems. Now, it's reasonable to assume that if the runoff into our dams is dropping off dramatically, then the availability of groundwater will have to reduce. It may not be exactly at the same rate, but we have to be planning for a future where we have less groundwater. And similarly, the surface water in our dams is also going to be dropping off. So what we see here, if you're a pessimist, what you see is a giant gap between supply and demand. But if you're an optimist, what you see is no gap until somewhere around 2020. And what that means is that we have a unique opportunity in Perth at the moment that no other state in Australia has and many other countries don't have. And that is we actually have security of water supply for the next 15 years or so. What we need to do is decide what we're going to do in that 15 years so that we have it for the future. Now, what we tried to do as the corporation was think outside the box and engage with our customers in the community. Remember, the difference between us and the Department of Water is primarily that we have customers who expect that when they turn on their tap, water will come out. And we're a utility accountable to our customers as well as to the people of Western Australia. So we engaged with them in a project we called Water Forever. And what was really interesting to me was that before we started the project, we did a lot of work in the corporation of the key issues and tried to position ourselves of our current thinking on many, many topics. And what we thought were the three key issues for the community were the cost of water, the quality of water, and future desalination plants. Where should they be sited? What should they be like? What we found out was what they're really interested in was how to use less water. What can I do about it as an individual? They wanted to see more recycled water being used, and they wanted to see the environment being clearly registered as part of the suite of options of all of our infrastructure and future planning. Now, Water Forever has been an enormous project. It's nowhere near over, but we've engaged with 28 formal presentations. We have run shopping centre one-on-ones with people in shopping centres touching 2,400 people. And all in all, including mail-outs and website hits, there have been nearly 6 million individual contact points with people in Western Australia over this project. So I think we should be getting a reasonable feel for what people are thinking. And as we look forward, we can see a number of possibilities about how we build, how we plan, how we deliver that future. Dubai is seen as the progressive place that is some people hold up as the way Perth ought to be moving. And indeed, it is truly a miraculous place. Now, we can build as many desalination plants as people want. The technology exists. There's plenty of designers and contractors, many of them here today, only too willing to start construction immediately on a whole huge number of them. And I'm very confident that we can get enough power somewhere to do it. Now, how sustainable is that? Is that what we want? Is that what we want for our community? It's quite technically feasible, but is it what we should be doing? When you look at this picture, you see a lot of brown bits and a few dark green bits. Now, I put it to you that if you're a rich person who lives in one of the dark green bits, Dubai is a really fantastic place to live. But if you're a poor person who lives in one of the brown bits, it may not be so great. And do we want a society where a garden is the privilege of someone who's rich? Personally, I think that's quite abhorrent, and we can do a lot better than that. But it's a discussion we need to be continually having with the community and with our customers and with all of us as we move forward. In fact, most of our early planning was a big, desperate desire to recreate the England that had been left by the poor people who were stuck here in a sand dune. And because of that, we have a history and an expectation of acres of lawn and very English-style gardens. Is this the future we need to have? We also have a history of very large blocks, if you look in the older suburbs, with acres of lawn, that in today's society, not many people are home all day playing on those acres of lawn. So we've been working with land developers to create a much more sustainable way of living within a water-efficient society. It doesn't mean you have to have brown gardens. It doesn't mean life has to be miserable. I am the last person to advocate austerity, believe me. I believe that we can have a fantastic lifestyle, but a different lifestyle. We're also heavily involved in a number of alternate schemes with developers to look at how the world could be. And the Brighton scheme, and this is a picture of the Brighton scheme, is a great example of this. Basically, it's a shared bore system with a separate set of pipes to supply water outside the home. And it has probes and garden monitoring things so that the sprinklers and the garden systems come on independent of the householder. So if it's been raining and the soil's wet, your sprinklers won't come on. If they're dry and they should be watered, your sprinklers will come on. And with the development is a layout that minimises water use and a whole lot of ways of managing the external water use better. And as this program develops, it will be really interesting to see what the internal water use of these houses are when people are living in a society where they're thinking about outside water use. Now, what if we hadn't been settled by the English? What if the Spanish had settled us? If you look at the beautiful gardens of Spain, you see water used extensively, but it's not water that you drink. You see greenery and shade and the use of a whole lot of different garden things that could be a fantastic way of going. We haven't painted this picture to the community yet. We need to bring everyone along with us that there's a different way of living. I don't know how many of you have spent any time in the Greek islands, but it's absolutely the most beautiful place I've ever been. And I kept thinking two things. One, this is so much like Rottnest. And two, why is Perth not like this when this is so much like Rottnest? And I think there's just so much scope for us to look at different ways of delivering all the things and all the lifestyle that we love, all the outdoors, all the barbecues, all the things that we value in a way that really makes sense in a very dry climate. Now, how will we work? In every discussion about water efficiency, the community starts off by kind of bagging industry. You know, industry should do more. Well, actually, industry are doing really pulling their weight and, in fact, leading in some areas. This is an example. This is CSVP's nitrogen stripping wetlands in the Kwinana area, where their wastewater is recycled through a wetland, which provides a habitat. I couldn't get a photo with lots of birds, but apparently there are lots of birds there a lot of the time. So it provides a fabulous habitat and is actually a really constructive way of dealing with an issue. This is our Kwinana water reclamation plant. The engineers amongst you will appreciate the beauty of the sun glinting on the tanks. The rest of you can wait for a picture of a dam or something. But this is just the win-win-win example. You recycle wastewater to a very high level, boiler feed quality water, so it can be sold to industry. And with the right pricing structure, projects like this could be being replicated across a large part of the state we live in. If you take the example of BP, in 1996, the BP refinery was the largest user of water in the Perth region. It used boiler feed water, cooling tower, makeup, process wash water, all kinds of things. They introduced a water minimisation program, initially to save money, Then it sort of lurched into a more environmental focus, and then everybody realised that you could do both. Currently, they've achieved a 38% reduction in the water that they're using across their facility. They're saving about $1.1 million a year, and they have an aspirational target of zero discharge and zero wastewater discharge and zero potable water use from the scheme in their whole facility. And this is the type of future that I think we should all be aspiring to. And it shows when you work cooperatively, you can achieve that. Now, how will we play? This future with less water doesn't have to be austere and depressing. I think one of the challenges is going to be looking for shared recreational facilities. As blocks get smaller, housing needs change, people aren't necessarily going to want to spend their weekends gardening, but they want to have access to somewhere to walk the dog, kick a footy, and play with the kids. But it's not just in Perth. One of the big projects that we're doing at the moment, actually it's a very small project, but a really interesting project, is the Ardalan project, which is an Indigenous community 220 kilometres north of Broome on the Dampier Peninsula. And what the corporation's doing is working with the community to gather wastewater, treat it in a fairly cursory way, but disinfect and then reticulate it back onto a number of ovals so that there can be a community sports facility in an area that's pretty dry. It's actually going to revive a footy team that was once highly competitive in the West Kimberley, and it links beautifully in with a lot of the work being done by the Clontarf Foundation to use football as a way of motivating disenfranchised Aboriginal youth in a way that can be something constructive. Now, I don't believe that a bit of wastewater on an oval is going to solve our Indigenous crisis overnight, although it may help the Dockers, and I admit to being a tragic there. But I do think it's a toe in the water of the kinds of projects we can be looking at to paint a picture for a future that we want to be part of. Thinking 50 years ahead is not the sole province of any one person. It involves the community, it involves our customers, it involves industry, the mining sector, government, the corporation, everybody in the state and everybody who will ever be born into the state or come and live here. Dealing with climate change isn't easy. We don't have the answers. It's a bit like dealing with the economic situation at the moment. You can kind of see a trend, but you have no idea how fast you're going or where you're going. It's challenging but achievable, and I think it's best summed up by the top statement, which really says if you want people to share your vision, it's probably best if you issue an invitation to be part of it. And that's exactly what we're trying to do with Water Forever. Thank you.